Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Coming up a little later in the show, Bill James' love of crime stories. The baseball statistics guru and advisor to the Red Sox has written a book about America's obsession with popular crime and what it says about who we are.
But first, today's talker. There are 12 million cancer survivors in America. From the moment they were diagnosed, their focus has been on treatment, chemotherapy, radiation, endless hospital visits.
And then, if they're lucky, comes the good news. They've beaten the disease. They've survived cancer. But have they reclaimed their entire lives from a disease that ravages the body and test the spirit? I mean, how can you feel whole again if, for example, you're afraid or unable to be physically intimate with your partner?
In other words, what happens if you can't have sex? It's a question that haunts millions of cancer survivors. Estimates range from nearly half to all cancer survivors suffer some kind of sexual problem directly related to their illness. In response, the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston has launched a groundbreaking sexual health program. We'll hear from the program's director in a moment.
The issue of sex after cancer comes to us by way of Rachel Zimmerman, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. We spoke to her earlier about how difficult it is for cancer patients to get back in the sexual saddle.
Rachel, this is obviously a difficult issue for people to talk about and confront, right?
It is. I mean, obviously, cancer in and of itself is difficult. People are basically focused on staying alive and what can they do to beat this disease. So once they start getting their lives back to normal, suddenly they've lost something that was central to their lives, their sex life. And many people had no idea that this would be sort of a side effect of their cancer or their cancer treatment. This affects millions of people. And of course, if you have a cancer that directly affects a sex organ, there's an immediate physical impact. But the emotional, psychological toll for both the patient and their partner is intense as well.
Now, in your writing on Common Health, you talk about some specific cases. I'm wondering if you can tell us about one of those.
Sure. I talked to a number of patients from younger women diagnosed in their 20s who have become infertile due to treatment-induced menopause, men who can't sustain erections after prostate cancer. I talked to a woman who didn't have cancer but had a high risk of developing it because she had a genetic mutation. She had both of her breasts and her ovaries removed, and she also went into menopause overnight, which made sex painful and her libido decreased. And she was very proactive and wanted help. And because sex gets difficult, the longer you wait, the harder it gets and the more difficult it gets to raise these issues.
So there's a sort of a use it or lose it aspect to this whole
exactly.
issue.
Exactly. And the studies on this show that the best indication of whether you can renew your sex life after cancer and treatment is how good your sex life was before. So if it was okay before, you have hope. But if it wasn't, things could get very difficult.
Now, speaking of help, you've profiled a sexual health program at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston. So tell us about that.
Well, the program is the most comprehensive sexual health program for cancer survivors, definitely in New England, and it's one of a handful of such programs in the country. And was launched by a psychologist, but there's a gynecologist who works there. They have referrals to other doctors and mental health experts in the community. And basically, they assess the patient, and often they come in with their spouses, and they deal with everything from brainstorming on new sex positions that might be helpful while you're in treatment, or prescribing vibrators. I mean, the head of the program actually has a little prescription pad, and she can say, go get vaginal lubricant at the boutique. So it's very specific and very focused on solving specific problems. Not to say that these problems are solved quickly. Sometimes it takes years.
Now, I'm struck by this. You mentioned that there are only a handful of these programs. Is this kind of therapy, this kind of treatment, readily accepted by the medical establishment?
I think it's accepted, but I think, again, it's very difficult to raise these issues in the context of cancer. I talked to a cancer surgeon who told me for some patients, talking about the sex problems they have after cancer is actually more difficult than talking about death. Hmm. And she told me that she does try to raise issues preoperatively, but really it's the surgeon's job to save lives, and it's not at the top of their list. So I really think it's incumbent upon the patients to start asking these questions as they're talking about what their treatment is and how things might unfold.
Well, fascinating topic. Rachel Zimmerman, thanks so much. That's Rachel Zimmerman, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog.
We're talking about sex after cancer and how getting your life back from the disease means maybe trying to get your groove back, and also how difficult that can be. If you're a cancer survivor, was sex unthinkable after or during your treatment? What did it mean to you to lose the ability or desire to be intimate? Did you even feel desirable? And partners, did your concern for your loved one's health trump maybe those bedroom eyes you once had? But overall, what better way is there to reclaim your life from cancer than this profoundly personal and intimate act? We'd love to hear your stories and thoughts on this, so give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, I know when it comes to cancer, as Rachel Zimmerman said, talking about sex can be as difficult as dealing with talk about death and dying. So that is exactly the reason why our next guest is here. She's Sharon Bober. She is a clinical psychologist and director of the groundbreaking Dana-Farber Cancer Institute's Sexual Health Program. It is one of the most comprehensive centers in New England and one of only few in the entire country. Sharon Bober, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, also with us is Michelle Nagel. She is a survivor of acute myeloid leukemia. Michelle, welcome to Radio Boston to you.
Thank you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you both on the program. And Michelle, actually, if I could just start with you. You're a cancer survivor of a very aggressive form of leukemia, as mm-hmm. I understand it. But when it comes to this question of physical intimacy, mm-hmm. During your treatment and afterwards, I mean, were you able to be intimate with your husband? And if not, what did that mean to you to lose that?
I was thrown into a situation where upon my sudden diagnosis, I didn't leave the hospital for 4.5 months. So a hospital bed is kind of difficult. Mm. Nobody was allowed to visit me unless they were gowned and gloves and masks and so forth. So intimacy is completely out of the question.
Yeah, sterility was pretty much the rule.
Correct.
And, I guess amongst all the immediate health concerns that you had for your very survival, not being able to have that kind of contact with your husband,
It was a loss. It was a loss as well as traumatic as being diagnosed. It was a loss that I grieved a great deal, and it was... Being a wife or even a mother, you are cognizant of what's going through their heads and trying to make sure that are their needs being filled, whether it's sexually or maternally. So I was very well aware and grieved that loss for not just for myself, but my whole family.
Well, and I guess if I could just ask you bluntly, after you completed your treatment and you had survived the disease, I mean, were you able to jump back in the saddle again?
Not at all. First of all, my treatment continued for 15 months. I was in the hospital a great deal of the time. I went through, I was in a coma. Hmm. I needed to learn how to walk all over again. So there were very long periods of time where I just couldn't have quiet time with my husband.
And Michelle, I mean, I imagine that when someone is recovering mm-hmm. from cancer and cancer treatment, as these things happen in stages, right, you sort of start getting your life back in particular stages. The first day you can take a walk outside, you say, thank you, I'll take that back. When you get to go back to work or vacation with your family, you say, thank you, I'll take that back. How long did it take you to get the intimacy back, or has it?
Completely, no, it hasn't. I've been dealing with the physical issues and also emotional issues. I have been in remission now for 2 years, and it's still not the same.
Do you feel, for as long as it's not the same, do you feel like you've wholly recovered?
No, I don't. I still feel like I'm on that long very slow journey to recovery.
Hmm. Well, Sharon Bober, director of the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute Sexual Health Program, how typical is Michelle's story of the hundreds of people who come see you every year?
I mean, it's interesting listening to Michelle's story because it makes me really appreciate how much this is a process. And I think it's interesting in the way you describe that people, you know, look to certain benchmarks like taking a walk again or getting back to work. And the reality is that for many people, claiming their sexuality and getting back to a feeling of being whole again in their body and in their relationship is not something that happens overnight, and it certainly is not something that you can clearly look at as, you know, getting back to work or not. Mm-hmm. And I think in the same way, we often don't talk about it with patients on the front end as something that might be a process of recovery and rehabilitation that takes time. So it's interesting even thinking about it, the metaphor of how quick we are to get back in the saddle. It's not something that you can sort of jump back to so quickly when it involves changes in both mind, body, and relationship.
Is it something that people who've just recently had a diagnosis of cancer, is it something that they're even thinking about?
You know,
Michelle's shaking her head, no, not at all.
I mean, I think, you know, as we all can imagine, when you first get that diagnosis, obviously, first and foremost, we're thinking about what we need to do to stay alive, to stay healthy for our families, for our spouses, and obviously sex is not at the top of that list.
Right.
But what's interesting is often the question is it on the list at all? You know, because at the very beginning, it's a crisis and we're not thinking about it. And then it's not always obvious where in the conversation with our treaters, with our providers, with our family members that you start to talk about it. So then sometimes, as Michelle alluded to, many, many months can go by, a year can go by, and then there's an assumption that somehow that part of your life will just spring back to life again without any particular preparation or conversation. And then all of a sudden, when it doesn't get just back online the way that it used to be, people often find themselves really confused and unsure of what to do.
Well, Sharon Bober and Michelle, jump in here with your personal experience as well, anytime you feel like. Describe to us, I mean, the ways in which cancer and its treatment have an impact on you know, people's ability to be intimate. Obviously, there's just the sheer difficulty of going through chemotherapy or radiation, but I also imagine that for, not all, but for some cancer survivors, there's the scars and just the sense of feeling that you're not, you don't even look like yourself anymore. Mm-hmm.
There are the physical and the emotional scars. For me, with a blood cancer, there was no surgery. My scars are more emotional than they are physical, although I have treatment rendered me, essentially it forces you through menopause. So hormonally, where most women get to ease into menopause, your body is just ravaged hormonally, and there are therefore physical aspects. For instance, a narrowing of the vaginal passage, mm-hmm. which makes for me complete penetration relatively impossible.
I mean, I think that's right. Certainly, you know, when we're looking at physical changes like treatment-induced menopause, which can be very severe, you know, that lack of estrogen overnight can cause, you know, a lack of, you know, that just the elasticity of tissue changes and the, you know, can make penetration quite uncomfortable or difficult. You know, women and men go through a variety of physical changes, from whether it's pelvic radiation, from surgery, from chemotherapy. Sometimes things aren't as obvious. Sometimes people have long-term fatigue issues, low energy. Sometimes people have, as you said, scars, or, you know, head and neck cancer patients deal with disfigurement, lack of saliva, things that we don't typically think about,
right,
but that would really have particular implication for intimacy.
Is this one of the reasons why regaining intimacy could potentially be so important? Because it's kind of one of the ways to measure you recapturing your the sense of yourself that,
sure,
you know, I am my whole person again. I'm, you know, beautiful and desirable,
sure,
again.
Sure. I think it's a huge part of quality of life. You know, when we think about being in one's body, when we think about that sense of being, of sort of feeling integrated in oneself, in a sense of true whole body, mind and body together, in some ways cancer treatment does so much to disrupt that. In so many ways, people often almost numb out or have to become distant from their body in order to sustain these very aggressive treatments. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden we get through all of those treatments but expect people to feel comfortable back in their body again. And it's not obvious, or it doesn't feel natural often.
Well, we are talking about sex after cancer and how reclaiming your whole life from the disease might mean trying to get your groove back. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Eager to hear as many stories as we can from listeners. And let me throw out a set of questions for doctors as well. If you have cancer patients that you're treating, do you talk with them about intimacy and about sexual well-being, or do they talk about it with you? And if so, how do you talk about it to each other? Again, we're at 1-800-423-8255. We've got a lot of people who want to join us. Chris is calling from Brighton. You're on the air, Chris.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. This conversation, or this topic, has definitely touched a nerve with me. I'm sitting in my car driving to an appointment, and I'm in tears because when I was diagnosed with breast cancer 5 years ago, it wasn't discussed with me. And I was diagnosed at 35, and I'd just been married for over a year. So it was very, very difficult for me to kind of get back into my life, and we're very sexually active. And since then, things have not been the same. I mean, we have not had sexual relations for over a year, and it's almost like we avoid it because, you know, after being treated with chemo or radiation after the surgery, I had bilateral mastectomy, I don't feel the same. I don't feel beautiful. You know, I have horrible scars, and it's just very, very difficult for me. And I'm glad to hear that the Dan Father has this program that, you know, that I can now tap into.
Chris, stick with us. Don't hang up just yet. I want to get Sharon Bober to respond to your call.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is a painful experience that is not an uncommon one. I think that the good news, Chris, is that there's a lot that you can do to reclaim your sense of self, to reclaim your sense of sexuality, and really intimacy with your partner. And, you know, this is, if there's one message that I really have, it's that there are all kinds of resources and strategies available, but often people don't know about them.
Michelle, do you have any advice or thoughts for Chris on maybe how to even get the conversation started or more fully developed with her partner?
I would suggest seeing Dr. Bober. It helped me immensely. And even though I started seeing her originally just by myself, eventually my husband did come with me for a few more times, pardon the pun, by the way, and because we do have a lot of issues. Chris may have had the bilateral mastectomy, but I'm carrying what I call 60 pounds that don't belong to me from steroid treatment that just kept me alive. And it's very difficult to feel attractive. I know that men are very visual creatures, and I know that my husband is looking at me saying, you know, if you'd only lose a couple of pounds, you know, and sorry, I'm not your Victoria's Secret model for now, but I'm doing the best I can.
Chris, has the biggest challenge, or one of the big challenges for you, being just even talking about this with your partner, or is that not the issue at all?
No, it is. It is an issue. I mean, I think that we have avoided talking about it, and that's definitely hurt our relationship, and we've definitely become distant because of it.
I mean, something that I often will say to people is that it's okay to say to your partner, you know, this is a part of my life that I know this is a part of our life that I know I'm thinking a lot about, and that I know it's different than it used to be. I also know it's hard to talk about it, but I wonder if it would be okay if we do talk about it. Even just starting a conversation in a very simple way like that can give your partner permission that it's okay to go to this place and even begin to talk about it, because it really often does become the elephant in the room.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for your call, and really best of luck to you as you continue to deal with your cancer. Let's take another call from Peterborough, New Hampshire. Steve is on the air. You're welcome to Radio Boston, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I'm listening to a lot of what you guys are talking about. My wife was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer 3 years ago, and she went through, the full gamut. She went through 12 months of radiation. I'm sorry, 12 months of chemo, radiation, double mastectomy, reconstruction, and then another year of Herceptin. And I guess from my perspective as a spouse, I mean, first of all, I guess I would challenge the whole idea that the men are sort of looking for the visual appeal, because for me at least, and I think for other men that I've spoken with, there's so much else tied up. You know, you're a father. We had three kids at the time. There were 3, 5, and 7 when she was diagnosed. So you're a father. You're a caregiver in the sense that you're often the one driving your wife to and from the appointment. So the sex piece for me, it went away. Well, I mean, we had just gotten through having kids too, so we were sort of thinking that things were going to get back to normal. You know, our son was just getting old enough.
Steve,
sort of went away quickly.
Steve, do you mind if I'm sorry to interrupt, Steve, but do you mind if I ask? Was part of the concern in your mind also that, you know, your wife, as she was undergoing treatment, was really quite fragile, and that maybe that physical intimacy just, you know, wasn't going to happen because she was already dealing with so many other physical demands on her body?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say that I was going to get there. I know I'm long-winded. I guess it's a pretty emotional thing to talk about, but yeah. I think that those moments of intimacy, like, they became very different in nature. You know, obviously, especially with the double mastectomy, I mean, and people know this, that, like, when she had reconstruction, her breasts have no feeling now. So there's a lot of stuff tied up in breasts in our culture and society and as a guy. And so it does change. Things change in detail. But during the actual treatment, you see what this person is going through, who you love, and you just... The concept, you know, and I know the whole menopause thing, she also went into menopause, the concept that in some way, if through sex, I would be hurting her, is absolute. You know, it actually made it, like, I didn't want to have sex with them.
Right.
Why would I want to do that further to my wife, who I love, and who I'm seeing go through all these difficulties, you know, so.
Steve, I have another question for you. I'm so grateful that you're sharing your story with us. If I could just ask another brief question. You said that sex, it became something different for you. Did it take on a different meaning between you and your wife?
Well, I guess that it means it's the healing piece. So when we were able to have sex again, it was a major milestone at all, you know, even at all. And then as time went on, and as things have slowly just beginning now to get a little more normal, it's really, for me, it's about healing, and it's a celebration, and it's not about, you know, it's different than before. That just, when you've been through something like this, I mean, you've just shared, the intimacy is a different feeling because you've shared so many other intimate things, like whether or not someone's going to survive. I mean,
Peter,
how much more intimate, you know, to make it through that together. I mean, obviously my wife made it through it, and I tried to help, but I don't know. I just feel like it's not sex. Like, it's not what we understand to be sex.
It's something entirely different, I imagine. Steve, thank you so much for sharing your story. I want to squeeze one more call in here, and that is from a male survivor of cancer. Fletcher's on the line from Quincy. Welcome to Radio Boston, Fletcher.
Thank you. My experience was much less serious than most of the other callers. I had prostate cancer, but it was a very small amount. But my prostate was so enlarged that something had to be done anyway. So I went ahead with a prostatectomy. It was a robotic-assisted laparoscopic prostatectomy, so the scars were minimal and the damage to my body was minimal. But ever since the operation, and it's nearly 2 years now, I have been unable to get an erection. What I have found is a doctor who prescribed medication that can be injected directly into the penis, which then gives you an erection for a while. But even then, the sex doesn't feel the same.
Fletcher, thank you so much for your call. And if you were able to be in our studio right now, you'd see Sharon Bober shaking her head up and down. Absolutely. This is a story you must have heard hundreds of times.
I think, unfortunately, it is a story that I heard about an hour ago in the clinic. So, yes, that's right.
So, I mean, and the reason why I definitely wanted to get Fletcher in here as a call is because, you know, we've been talking a lot about women who are cancer survivors. But, you know, I'm sure half of the folks you see are men.
I do. I see a lot of men. And unfortunately, you know, it's very true that, you know, so many of the strategies that we employ to try to treat cancer and cure folks, including, for example, the prostatectomy, where there's sort of every effort made to do nerve-sparing surgery, you know, the reality is that sometimes it doesn't always work out as we hope. And so often there are long-term consequences, like, you know, erectile dysfunction, that are profoundly distressing. So, you know, what I would say is that it speaks to the issue of how sexuality is also, it's a broad topic. We're not just talking about the mechanics, but we're also talking about the issues of adjustment and coping. And what does that mean to have to get used to having sexuality look different and feel different than it used to be?
Michelle, if I can ask you, you know, I threw out that question to our listeners earlier about, you know, have you talked about it with your doctor, or does your doctor talk about it with you? What's your experience along that line? Did you bring it up with your doctor, saying, this treatment's having an effect on my intimate life, what do I do?
No, I had no idea what treatment was doing at the time. It was only after treatment, when it was relatively safe for me to have intimacy, that and my body didn't work like it did before, and I didn't understand. And it was through my bone marrow transplant doctor that he recommended that I see Dr. Bober, who fortunately explained to me actually what treatment meant for my body. Mm-hmm. But what all of this is saying to me is a term that probably all of us, the people who are listening, as well as Dr. Bober and I, is the new normal, and having to redefine what normal sex life is, or intimacy of any sort. It's not like it was before. You have to redefine it almost every day.
Mm. Well, we've just got a minute to go. And Sharon Bober and Michelle Nagel, I just want to sort of, I guess, ask a last question on behalf of everyone who's listening, who might be experiencing this right now. For those people who have received a diagnosis of cancer, and actually, you know, our listener Steve, he used, I think, the right word, which is healing. Like, achieving intimacy once again is a sign of further healing. Mm-hmm. What would you advise people to do if they're thinking, I don't know how to deal with this?
I mean, I would just say that it's very important that patients really advocate for this topic to come up on the radar, so that, you know, what I would say is, don't wait for your doctor or your treatment team to bring up the topic, but in the same way that you ask about how there are going to be side effects, you know, all kinds of side effects, ask ahead of time, you know, how might this treatment affect my sexual function? And also think of, you know, access the resources that are out there. The American Cancer Society, the NCI, have websites that have a lot of information. Certainly, we have a terrific program at the Farber. We have a great team, gynecologist Sandy Falk, who really, you know, work together, pelvic floor folks. But the fact is, there are other resources out there as well. They're online or in book form. And I think it's important that people know that they can bring up the topic with their treatment team very much on the front end of treatment, not just after they have a problem later on.
Michelle, briefly, your thoughts?
Please don't be afraid to talk about it. Please don't be afraid to ask about it. Just, that's the first step and the most important one.
Well, Michelle Nagel, a survivor of acute myeloid leukemia, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story.
Thank
I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Sharon Bober, clinical psychologist and director of Dana-Farber Cancer Institute's Sexual Health Program, thank you so much for coming in as well.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
There's much more information about the program at our website, radioboston.org. Well, we'll be back after a short break. And up next, our country's most popular crimes, reinterpreted by one of the nation's best statistics gurus on baseball. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, along with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.